It is time for our Positive Chats podcast. Today, we have another author. This is the book we're going to talk about, Bags, Helping Your Kids Lighten the Load. This is Chris Sasser. Did I say, and I want to make sure I said that correctly, Chris?
You did, Maggie.
All right, Chris Sasser. So Chris has been serving kids, students, and families in full-time church ministry for 3 decades. 3 decades? Really?
Yeah, wow. It just means I'm old. That's all.
Yeah, I feel you. So you are a pastor of Family Ministries in Port City Community Church. Sounds great. So you're working with kids of all ages, it sounds like, birth through high school. When it comes to how our kids will turn out, relationship matters, and it matters mm-hmm. a lot. So you say that. Expand on that.
Well, I think, Maggie, relationships are really at the core of who we are. And one of the things that I've just noticed over the years is, and this is pre-pandemic, it's post-pandemic, mm-hmm. it's all wrapped into there. It's just kids are struggling. What I've come to kind of understand through a lot of different ways is that I think that kids are growing up under so much pressure. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of packing and carrying with them some tremendous kind of baggage, if you will, mm-hmm. that they have no idea how to deal with. And a lot of their baggage kind of comes from their relationships with their parents or their peers or their mm-hmm. siblings. And so I just sort of believe, and again, in conversations with lots and lots of teenagers and young adults, that the kind of the bags that they're packing, if you mm-hmm. will, can weigh them down.
Yeah.
And can kind of keep them from living lives that are emotionally and relationally and spiritually and mentally healthy. And we all know as adults that these bags can follow us for the rest of our lives. And so the book is targeted at parents.
Yes.
Where I think we as parents just have the opportunity to pay attention to what's happening to our kids, especially in their relationships and in the way that they feel the pressure to perform in life and mm-hmm. The way that they kind of play the comparison game. We just got to pay more attention. And we got to work at helping them lighten the load along the way. I'm not naive enough to think that our kids can get to, you know, their young adult years and not have any baggage. We all have baggage, We all kind of understand that phrase. But I just want for us as parents to help our kids get to their young adult years and just be healthier.
Yes.
And we all know how kind of this mental health conversation and crisis is real.
Yeah.
If you are around any teenagers or young adults, you know it's weighing them down, and so. Relationships are just at the crux of it. The book's not completely about relationships, but certainly the relational bags are the ones that we all start with in life. And so it's super important for us to pay attention to.
Yeah, because you have several bags here.
Yeah, it's eight common bags that kids pack.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have relational bag, performance, identity, comparison, authority, rejection, guilt and shame, and disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the relational bag you talked about, because you said that's the heaviest.
Well, I think it's one of the heaviest. It's funny, a lot of people do ask me sort of what are the heaviest bags, mm-hmm. and it's hard to pin one down. I mean, I do think relationships, obviously, like I mentioned, you know, they're the crux of sort of our being is all the relationships that we have in life. But I will say that a lot of the other bags sort of layer on top of the relational bag, and you know, the performance mm-hmm. bag, for instance, plays into it because oftentimes we feel the pressure to perform from the people we are in relationship with in our life. Oftentimes, you know, our identity gets formed based on the people that are in our lives and we have relationships with. And so a lot of the different bags, I believe, sort of overlap and layer each other. But the relational bag kind of is the first one that I talk about in the book. And there are, like the way I describe it in the book, there's three different sort of types of relational bags that people pack. The first ones are relational bags of parents. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know it's a mixed bag, if you will, on kind of the relationships that people have with parents. Some relationships are good, some are not. But I think kind of as kids are growing up, that's the first place that they pack relational bags. And I did a lot of focus groups for this book. I'm not, like you mentioned, I've been in full-time ministry for almost 30 years now. But when I started to write the book, I said, you know what, I'm going to talk to young adults and college students. And so I did focus groups with probably 300-400 college students and young adults kind of in my context at my church, because mm-hmm. we have a great college ministry and young adult ministry. And people just talked about their relational bags with their parents. And it was often, I love my parents, but, and it was always kind of a but there. And it was always because of the tension that just, I think naturally can exist in the way that our parental relationships kind of happen in life. And then there's relational bags with siblings. Like if, you know, there's more than one child in the house, there's relational baggage, there's sibling rivalry, there's things that we as parents have to pay attention to. And then obviously kids today are packing a lot of bags with their peers.
Yeah,
you know, and they just kind of don't know how to deal with it. And a lot of that has to do with the technology and the social media and the pressure from that, and the things that get posted and the things that get said in a direct message or on an Instagram post that just are hurtful and painful. And kids, they just don't know how to deal with all the relational bags that they've packed. So it's a heavy one. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I agree. So you talk about parenting, and you use the term lawnmower parent. Explain that, and why that's a bad idea.
Well, that's not my term, to be quite honest. I do kind of reference it in the book.
Okay.
And it was a new term for me as I was doing research on the book. Most of us have heard of helicopter parents over the years, you know, it's parents that hover. Lawnmower parents, or in some parts of the country, I've heard it called snowplow parents. They're just parents that kind of pave the way for their kids.
Yeah.
You get out in front, you mow the grass, you get rid of the snow, and you give your kids a nice, clean little grassy or snowy path to walk on. And really what happens with kids, a lot of kids today is they just don't have to experience kind of the tension of having to figure things out on their own. They don't have to kind of go through hardships. One of the ways I've also heard it said recently is that a lot of parents have become their kids' agent. To where they're going to kind of, you know, negotiate with the teachers on the right grade or the right class, or they're going to have to step in when their kid's not getting enough playing time on the travel team, or they just sort of step in and they're their kid's agent. They plow the way for them. And I think what that's doing to a lot of our kids is they get to their young adult years and they don't know how to handle diversity or adversity.
Right.
Because their parents have kind of done it for them for a bunch of years. So that's where that idea comes from.
Get that. So we brushed on social media a little bit, and you encourage parents to monitor that devices, social media. So advice there on how you make that work, how we make that work with our kids.
Well, this has been a conversation obviously for the last, feels like 100 years when it comes to like, what's the right amount, you know, what's the right age for your kid to get a phone or social media or to kind of be involved in technology. And I don't know kind of a hard and fast answer to that. I do know that, and I'll just anecdotally tell you kind of what we did with our family is, and we feel like it paid off for us. You know, I remember when we moved here to our new town where our son was, you know, playing basketball in the driveway. He did not have a smartphone. He was, I think, in seventh grade at the time. And the second grader next door did.
Yeah.
And so pretty quickly you see them kind of sitting in the grass together, huddled around the second grader's phone and who knows what they were looking at. And we just made the decision that our kids weren't going to allow them to go into that world until the last possible moment.
Yeah.
So for our kids, I think our son didn't get a phone until he was in ninth grade.
Yeah.
Our daughter may have gotten it a little bit earlier because you have to handle, you know, your different kids in different ways.
Yes.
But like the thing that we did that I would encourage every parent to do is your child's phone must live in your bedroom or in a common space. Do not allow your child to have their phone in their room. And I would say we did this with our son, again, who just graduated through his senior year almost. And it just takes the pressure off of them having to be on it because it's so addictive to them.
Yeah.
They don't know how to put it down. And so I know of so many kids today, and when I say kids, I mean teenagers as well, who will they'll have their phone in their room and they'll be on it until 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
And
they're just scrolling sometimes, but you know, sometimes they get in, you know, find trouble spots where they shouldn't go. But just make a hard and fast rule that they don't have access to it 24/7.
Yeah.
Give them times where they're away from their device and away from social media. And then the last thing I'll say is when it comes to social media, and this is hard, it's been hard for me as a parent, but I think it's hard for a lot of parents, is for a while, until your kid is kind of mature enough to handle it, you need to be where they are. In other words, if they're on Instagram, you need to be on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
If they're on Snapchat, you need to be on Snapchat. If they're on TikTok, you need to be on TikTok. Not so you can stalk them, but so you can understand the world in which they live.
Yeah.
And they're, I promise you, if they're on any of those social media things, they are seeing things that they do not know how to process.
Yeah. True.
And part of the way I've heard it said is kids are not more mature nowadays, but they are more exposed to things nowadays. And so things that, you know, maybe you or I, Maggie, were exposed to in our college years, lots of kids are exposed to when they're 12 years old.
Yeah.
and their brain is not developed enough to be able to process what they're seeing, what they're hearing, and they're not able to handle it, and it sends them in a wrong direction. So make sure they don't have their phone in their room overnight, mm-hmm. be where they are on social media, and just be aware of what's going on with that world.
Yeah, yeah, good advice. So what do you think are some of the causes, the leading causes of the mental health crisis among the young people right now, today?
Honestly, I do think it is a lot of kind of the things that I mentioned in the book. Mm-hmm. I think performance and the pressure to perform is a tremendous cause of it. I not only work at the church, but also a volunteer as a high school football coach. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the football field at a pretty high level of high school football every day in the fall now. And so I kind of see the pressure to perform that is put on these kids. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in athletics, you know, the pressure to perform in school for a lot of students is just enormous.
Yeah.
Because, you know, depending on sort of, you know, who your family is or where you're from, you got to make sure you kind of, you know, get in the right track, if you will, at a very early age of school so you can get into the right college, whatever that is in your context. And you kind of got to have to get on that road early, and kids feel that pressure. There's, you know, of course, the social pressure that they feel kind of with their peers. Again, a lot of it revolving around them trying to live up to a certain standard online and get enough likes or get enough views to a particular video. It just, the way that they have to perform all the time, like they're always on.
Mm, yeah.
And that is just, I think, crushing a lot of them. And actually, there's a quote from a teenager recently. So we did a survey at our church, kind of talking to high school students about sort of what's going on in their life and what do they need to hear from us kind of as ministry leaders.
Right.
And one high school student essentially said, you know, that they used to love school. They hate school now. They just kind of stare at the clock. They play three sports and they have to miss some class, but their parents are always on them. Their parents kind of say, you know, watch out for that 93 because it's only an A minus. It's not good enough. And oftentimes their parents will, you know, kind of blame kind of their attitude and their mood on their phone. And the very end of the quote was, this was a long quote by a high school student, someone has to tell adults that we will crumble under this pressure.
Mm.
And I feel like that's a little bit of what I'm trying to do with kind of pointing out, hey, these kids are carrying some bags and the pressure that they feel is enormous. They are crumbling internally. And for some of us, we don't see it.
Yeah.
And that'll come out when they're in their mid to late 20s in different ways. And so we got to pay attention to it.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, because I look, like the first line in chapter one is a quote from a young adult in your book, and it says, we really need our parents to take the time to learn and understand the source of our baggage.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That is really.
And part of what I say that really the book is it's about awareness and preventative maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first started doing this project, I thought, you know, surely somebody's done this before, because I had this idea, and I tell kind of the story of where the idea came from in the first chapter of the book. But when I started looking for kind of surely somebody's done this before, I couldn't find anything. All I could find was, you know, how to unpack your bags. I mean, that's, you know, that's why we all go to counseling, is because we have bags we need to unpack, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like what we as parents have the opportunity to do, and even kind of leaders in the church, we have the opportunity to just pay more attention to it and be aware of what's happening to our kids. And the way that I say it is, what if we paid more attention, let's say when our kids are, you know, between the ages of 5 and 25, if mm-hmm. we could pay more attention to what's going on with them and be proactive during those years, could our kids get to their young adult years and just be more healthy? And that's what I want. And that's part of what I've had to do in my life is I've redefined success, kind of what does success look like as a parent? Because for a lot of us, especially in North America, you know, success looks like, hey, we're going to get our kids, you know, like I said, in the right grades and, you know, getting the right grades and the right track when it comes to school, get mm-hmm. them on the right sports team, get them to the right college, you know, get them in the right job, let them make enough money, let them marry the right person, have the right social circle, have the kids, white picket fence, and then let's, you know, kind of do it all over again. The problem is we know so many people who have done that and they're just empty.
Yeah.
And for me, I've redefined success. That's not success for me. Success is that my kids are healthy when they get to their young adult years. I've already mentioned kind of the four different ways. I want them to be healthy mentally. I want them to be healthy emotionally. I want them to be healthy spiritually. And I want them to be healthy relationally. If I can get my kids to their young adult years and they can be healthy in those areas, I don't care where they went to college. I don't care how much money they're making. Mm-hmm. I do care who they marry or kind of all that. But the most of what we typically focus on as success in parenting, I've had to redefine that because, I've seen way too many people accomplish that success and their kids are a mess.
Yeah.
I want my kids to be healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy kids, happy, healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I see that because I'm going through some of the quotes from the young adults. In the book really hit you because you had a college student talk about, where was it? No, I lost it. But his quote was about, you know, we don't want to unpack what's in those bags because we know it's in there. And that really hits hard.
Well, I mean, if we're honest, a lot of us adults are like that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the interesting things about kind of when I have a chance to talk to parents about this, because I'll do this as a seminar in some churches at times. And every time I do, parents will come up to me afterwards and they'll say, wait a minute, I can't really talk about what's going on with my kids and their bags because I have all of these bags that you've mentioned and I don't know what to do with them. And again, that's where I would say, just, you need to go to counseling, talk to a friend, talk to your pastor, you know, begin to unpack them. And these kids, they know what's happening to them. They just don't know how to handle it. And they're saying, hey, adults in my life, can you please help? And I'm saying, as adults, we have to help. And part of helping is just leaning in and paying attention. And oftentimes what happens, especially as our kids get to their kind of late teenage years, is parents begin to back off and begin to think, hey, you know, my job's kind of done here when my kids are, you know, 18 or so. And I would say, no, you need to, in those years, you need to lean in even more. It's a different kind of parenting. It's a parenting where you want to have influence on them. And that actually goes back to the relationships. You can't have influence on someone you don't have a relationship with. So all throughout their years, you have to work on building the relationship with your kids so that you have the influence when it comes to all these really important decisions. Because sure, when they're 12, they're making decisions about things that are, you know, they feel like is super important. When they're 18, 20, 22, they're making decisions about life that are really important.
Yeah, it's true.
And so as a parent, we got to be there with them in this journey. And one of the best ways to do that is through relationships.
Yeah. So this is Chris Sasser we're talking to. So you've been serving, just a little background again, serving kids and families for 3 decades. He has this book, this wonderful book about bags, helping your kids lighten the load. And there's more information and at equipandencourage.com, thebagsbook.com. And it's just so great that you're helping young people or helping parents raise great spiritually happy young people. But final advice for parents and helping their kids succeed spiritually in the world.
Can I give 2 things?
Sure.
Number one is, if you want to help your kids succeed spiritually, then you have to make your relationship with God a priority. So many parents, you know, especially if you're a part of a good church with a good children's ministry or a youth ministry, parents will kind of, the way I heard it said one time is, parents have subcontracted the spiritual lives of their kids to the church. It's why I have a job. Right. And why I have for 30 years is because, you know, parents have wanted they've been a little bit scared of sort of leading their kids spiritually themselves. But study after study says that the primary spiritual leader of kids and teenagers is their parents. And so as a parent, you have to take your faith seriously and model that to your kids. Yeah. That is going to be one of the things that speaks to them the most, is if they believe that you have an authentic, real faith. If your kids know that you want them to go to church to get good morals and values and be a good kid, quote unquote, but you don't really live that out yourself, they can sniff that out and they're going to turn and run at some point because they want authenticity. And so you got to live it out yourself. The second kind of practical thing I would say, and this goes to the building the relationship part, is as a parent, you have to put your phone down, right? Walk away from your phone.
Yeah.
It's because as much as we want to talk about, you know, teenagers and the next generation being addicted to the devices, we are too. If we're honest, there was a study done recently by a group called Axis that is just a great group. And they kind of asked teenagers, what is it they want the most from their parents? And teenagers said, like, the overwhelming answer was, I want my parents to put their phone down and pay more attention to me. And so we as parents have to be present with our kids at every moment that we can. And that doesn't mean we're all in the den watching TV, but we're all on our device. Or, you know, where you have to check an email while we're at dinner or whatever. I mean, as parents, we have to put the device down and pay more attention to our kids, because when we don't, they see other things being a priority more than them being a priority. And it makes them create distance in the relationship. And that's the last thing we want.
Chris Sasser, Sass, as we've been calling you, your book, this is called Bags, Helping Your Kids Lighten the Load. Chris, thank you so much for being on today. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.